How do you actually attain the freedom you want in your life? That's what we're exploring today on the Conscious Success Podcast. I'm your host, Madhu. This is where we teach you how to master your mind, enhance your health, and expand your wealth. I'm really excited to introduce you to our special guest, Stefanos, who's going to be sharing with us stuff that's probably going to bend your brain a little bit. He's a world-renowned relationship coach and personal transformational leader with over 20 years of experience. He's the co-founder of the Elementum Coaching Institute and the Empowered Brotherhood, who's been guiding thousands of people internationally, from Olympic gold medalists and special force soldiers to everyday men and women, through everything from healing trauma and redefining masculinity to creating deeper love and purpose in their lives. Stefanos not only blends Eastern wisdom with modern psychology, which kind of makes him, frankly, one of the most sought out teachers on these topics in the world, but he also does it in a way that makes it so accessible and frankly intriguing. Check this out. Mr. Steph, happy that this finally worked out. We've got a lot of mutual friends, and I've been uniquely interested in having this conversation because everyone that's listening on a regular basis knows we've been talking a lot about not just the mind, but specific patterns of the mind and how they correlate from our, let's say, the patterns in our adulthood and how they connect to what our experiences were in our childhood. And I'm curious, in your case, what was it when you were an adult, or what experience or patterns did you notice in yourself that helped you start to make those connections to, say, challenges you had in your childhood or just childhood experiences in general?
Yeah, reactivity was a big one. So the response or the reaction not really matching the circumstances. So for example, I would maybe get really angry or really protective or defensive and aggravated, and as a result of that, become impatient or even aggressive in my demeanor if someone said something that I just didn't agree with. And I started noticing that pattern. I thought, that this isn't matching. Look, I grew up with violence and aggression, and so I was able to make that connection. Like, okay, maybe it's a conditioned response, but there was also more than that. There was a very visceral sense, like I would go from 0 to 100. And I still, I don't want to say I still do in the same ways, I don't, but that still lives in me in some capacity. So like I've rid myself of that demon or that wolf, but the way I relate to it has changed. But I would go from 0 to 100 and feel very threatened in my physiology, feel very threatened in my mind. And so I just thought, as I started to notice that, I thought, this isn't matching. And so let me go deeper into this. Let me explore this, not just by myself, but also with some support, because I can't see everything within me and I can't see the forest through the trees. So let me get some support with someone or a group of people that can actually see what I'm not seeing.
What was that support? When you say support,
in many
person.
Forms, yeah, like therapists, coaches, friends, you know, just asking very honest questions about, hey, what do you see? Like, for example, hey, I did this the other night. Do you think that was appropriate? Do you think that was inappropriate? Like, what are your thoughts? What are you seeing and feeling? Like, really attempting to do my best to be more open to what others were seeing that I couldn't see.
More of an objective, someone else outside of your brain that could see.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a beautiful way to put it, going from 0 to 100. It's almost like that in itself is a good indicator. Something's up here. Default programming and that.
Yeah. When it's not necessary. You know? There wasn't a need for 0 to 100. Even if I disagree with someone, or even if someone says something that is intentionally mean, there's no need to go from 0 to 100. It's not a physically life-threatening situation.
Well, but you alluded to that point that because in child, and help me if I understood you correctly, and I know you teach a lot about this, you could then understand through different support coaches, therapists, and your own introspection that there were experiences in your childhood, I think you used the word, let's just say stimulated, it caused certain senses of lack of safety, survival mechanisms of sorts coming out. What would you say helped you identify what those safety patterns were, or I should say the things that challenged your safety while you were a child?
Yeah, so intimate relationships have definitely been a big help. Obviously, being in intimate relationships, but more importantly, deliberately, intentionally reflecting on those relationships and how those people behave, how I behave, the mirror that is relationship, being committed to growth in a relationship. And again, I use relationships as a means to deepen into our own selves. I also, and I continue to extensively study psychology, human performance, trauma, somatics, nervous system, neuropsychobiology. Like I just study, and that's part of it, but living it, like really being a student of this, not only in the intellectual sense, but in the lived experience sense, and bringing those practices into my own life personally, but also in my relationships, and like doing my best to practice, doing my best to repair if I behave in a way that maybe has not been appropriate in the relationship, and then coming back to those practices as often as possible.
So you mentioned, and I want to dig more into these in a minute, but you mentioned different types of practices that you've learned from breath work, somatics, et cetera. You just alluded to a few that I want to extract as much of a list as we can. And so you mentioned those help you find like a theoretical sense, and then the relationship itself being kind of mirror makes it so that you're accountable to actually following the things you want to follow or the character of what you want to be.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously everyone listening has been in some relationship, whether it's intimate or not, and knows that fighting is very rare. You shouldn't fight. Yeah, of course, you know, it's a very reflective of what's going on. And whatever obsesses you is not necessarily the other person, but there's some trigger within us. And so what would you say helps keep you accountable other than just having the other person there? Like, what are those internal beliefs that you have that keep you like, okay, even if I want to react a certain way, I'm not going to. I'm going to react the way I've taught myself to, or I'm going to show up the way I want to show up, as opposed to the way, say, that default programming wants to respond.
So having a set of commitments that we all live by. So I make commitments, guiding principles, if you like, that I do my best to adhere to. And so one of them, as an example, is being open-minded and open-hearted to receive feedback from people that I care about. Like to create enough of a safe space where they can be in their truth. And we have an understanding that we can come back to relational repair if we need to. If it gets heated or intense, whatever intense looks like, where we're not hearing each other, we can come back to active listening. We can come back to empathy. We can come back to practicing understanding. We can come back to speaking our truth and also honoring the other person's, right? Being compassionate. Those practices and honoring those practices makes also a big difference. Then it's just my own personal practices that I have, whether it's breath work, meditation, exercise, as three staples that are in my life, right? And breath work is just the intentional, deliberate movement or attention to breath, right? Because, I mean, we're always in breath work. That's how we are alive, by breathing, you know. 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, 3 minutes without air, something like that, right? Like it's you know, we're always breathing, but just learning to regulate my own nervous system has been very powerful for me. So it keeps me in relational contact when there's relational conflict, right? Because when there's conflict, we either want to run or we want to fight. We want to fight or we want to flight, right? Essentially, or we freeze, but that's just shutting down. It's the same thing. Like we either want to be in a very aggressive way and be hyperprotective, or we want to be hypoprotective and we want to shut down, and whatever shutdown looks like as well. Like there's form there too. So it's doing my best to not do that. And if I do that, well, how quickly and sincerely can I come back to baseline where I can really be in the conflict with the person? And also, you know, like set healthy boundaries, sure, you know, state your needs, all those things, but really be in it.
So you're saying from a personal level, you do all those things that keep you sane of sorts.
Yeah, as much as possible, of course. Keep me grounded, keep me present. Yeah, keep me regulated.
Kind of keep you in that deliberate state of mind of sorts, reacting consciously per se. And then on top of that, you have these commitments to adhere by. To the way you explained it, I almost thought it's like bumpers in a bowl. I haven't bowled in a long time. Yeah, I wish you could go bowling. Yeah. But you put the guardrails up. It makes it a little bit safer of sorts, so that you can hit the pins or accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, they're guiding lights, right? Like they're all guiding principles. You can call it whatever you want. You can call them morals, personal morals, personal values. You can call them personal objectives that you want to create in your life in relationship to other people and your key relationships. You can call them whatever you want. It doesn't matter too much, but they're reminders. They're also reminders, you know, oh, this is what's important to me when I start to destabilize or feel dysregulated in my nervous system, where I want to be reactive, and you identify your pattern. Is it that I want to be aggressive? I'm reducing it here, and I'm simplifying, but do I want to shut down? Okay, well, shutting down may not be useful because that keeps me out of the conversation, communication, exploration with the other person. But then being aggressive isn't helpful either, because now I'm being threatening, but we're also, that person has to focus on managing that big emotion as opposed to the actual substance of the conflict and getting to repair. So where do I want to sit in that, right? And so if you can identify what a guiding principle is or a commitment to yourself that gets you back into regulation, that keeps you in relational contact, right? Where, again, that's connection, empathy, understanding, compassion, seeking to understand the other person. This makes a very big difference in relationship. When you prioritize seeking to understand the other, by default, of course, you're going to be heard. By default, of course, you have to share your truth, but how you share it really matters and how you listen really matters. And that's, you know, I think it's an ongoing learning process for all of us. I'm not 100% effective at that 100% of the time. Sometimes I, you know, quote unquote, fail miserably and I need to pick myself back up and I need to choose to learn from that. And can I keep coming back to, you know, my baseline, and can I keep coming back to not my ego, but you know, not my personality, but my personhood? And that's life, man. I mean, it's important, I believe, to be very committed to our own growth.
Well, I like how you presented this idea that it's like you have to have the awareness first. And I so much value your kind of eloquent way you said that, especially with how vulnerable, because it's so easy for the mind to convince us, you know, I have this ideal and I have to do it all the time. It's like, rather, if I'm hearing you correctly, figure out what you want first. Bring the awareness to it.
Yeah. Spend some time thinking about what you actually want. Yeah, make a plan.
And then do your best and don't expect 100% success. But really, the success is having a plan and then doing your best to follow it. And also, as you expertly said, having some guidelines through a commitment.
Yeah.
But Steph, commitment's so hard. How am I supposed to commit to someone else if I myself struggle to follow through with my commitments? What am I supposed to do then, Steph?
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in on today's Conscious Success podcast. I know with certainty you've taken away very practical things that will frankly improve the quality of your life. A fun note, I always like to shout out things that I appreciate. And if you're located anywhere near the San Diego area, and you've even considered starting a podcast or frankly even just making great content, I highly encourage you check out the MK Lab, located here in central San Diego. We come here as often as possible. It's such a beautiful setup. I don't even have to convince you because you can see what it's like. So make sure you check it out if you're located in Southern California.
Heal the wound that has you in poor relationship with commitment. And usually that wound is having an example of intimacy being unsafe. For example, you know, parents divorcing, financial troubles in your home growing up, all of these experiences that are survival based growing up at such an influential, impressionable age really shape the way we relate to our sense of worthiness and our sense of what's possible. And we usually live in probability, which is fear, contraction, you know, nervous system dysregulation, you know, everything's a risk, everything's a threat, or more is a threat than not, as opposed to possibility, you know, like really what's possible. Let me vision big. Let me dream big because I trust other people. It doesn't mean you're naive. I mean, some people are, of course, but it's not about naivety. It's about trusting. You're seeing goodness in people and you're leading from that place and you're leading life through what's possible. Now, again, I think it's important to assess risk in life. I mean, our brains and our bodies naturally do that. If you were to put our body brain in a category, it would definitely be one that's more negative. It's primed to notice what's not working. It's primed to notice danger. It's primed to notice threat. Hence why media does exceptionally well at capturing our attention.
I haven't noticed that part.
You know, but it's with our own consciousness, with the evolution of our prefrontal cortex, I believe, with our awareness and our, you know, intellect, emotional, cognitive, spiritual, etc., we have a greater capacity to be in possibility, you know. I really, really live openly, right, and not be confined or determined by our past, no matter how horrific or quote unquote bad it was. Now, of course, there are exceptions to that. I'm not, again, naive personally to the fact that some people have experienced so much physiological damage that it's I don't want to say impossible, but highly improbable that they can stabilize their psychology, you know, and that's a whole other conversation, but that's a fringe conversation, right? We're not having that now. We're not speaking about that. Even those that have experienced intense trauma, and I've worked with people like that for the last 25 years, and quite frankly, in the sort of niche, if you like, of very successful individuals, high-performing individuals that have quite severe trauma, acute, chronic trauma even, and can actually move. You can work through that. I myself have experienced that and moved through that. Again, do afflictions of that still come up for me? Absolutely. Like I'm not... It's not about being fully healed. It's not about that. It's about shifting the relationship to the intensity that you've experienced, what you've made it mean psychophysiologically, and then how you continue to play that out in your life, you know? Because you can let it hinder you or you can allow it to help you grow, you know? And again, like you don't have to be attentive to your trauma and doing inner work to only be successful. There are a stack of successful people out there, you know, materially successful, right, that are still holding on to a lot of contraction in their nervous systems, physiologically, psychologically as well. And they can continue to create success. However, it just comes at a cost and it's not sustainable. And what's happening in the inner world? Because the outer world looks all shiny and bright. You know, you got the Bugatti, you got the four houses, you got the $1 million a week coming in, whatever it is, right? But what's happening in here? And for most, there's an emptiness in here. And the fear is that if we address the emptiness, then the fuel source that has created all this material value for me and validation will disappear. That can be true, but actually most often not, it's not true. Yeah, you just use a different fuel source, one that's actually cleaner.
Get a sustainable fuel.
Yeah.
Well, I want to drill this point you mentioned into my brain, and I want to kind of bring it up again for the people in the back, as they say. I want everyone to lean into this idea, and that it really comes down to the narrative that you, as you're mentioning so eloquently, that kind of faith that this is a possibility, this is an opportunity for me, and fear, oh, this is something that could kill me. Both of those depend on believing in something that's not happened yet, or that's not necessarily true, and therefore creating the...
It's a possibility piece, right?
Practice, the practice to lean into that option as opposed to the fear option, and not negating it, as you may definitely fear. I'm a big fan of fear, the ones that keep me safe, but rather taking, as you so nicely said, taking a conscious approach to a deliberate approach to saying, I'm going to practice placing my faith in leaning to these ideas as possibilities, as opportunities, things that can bring me the life that I want, as opposed to where fear. And thank you also for, I know I felt similarly what you're expressing, like, this stuff works for normal people who haven't experienced like critical trauma in their childhood. But for people like me who have, good luck, right? Maybe next life, you know, let me call you next life. And so is there anything else you could share for those, say, who had this thought, like I know I did for many years, that might feel, wow, but not what I've gone through. Maybe others can do it, but not me. Is there any thoughts you could share in terms of like providing, say, that possibility, that hope, that faith in why they too can attain the life that they want despite what they went through?
Yeah, so this is very typical of that high performer, high achiever, possibly perfectionist individual. It's like, oh, it's too much. I'm not even going to try. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and I'll battle through and I'll make it work. Don't think so many steps ahead, right? You're attempting to think of perfection in the end state. Firstly, there is no end state. And secondly, there is no perfection, right? Perfection is, I mean, not to get too esoteric or philosophical, but...
No, please. My friend, if it were up to me, all we ever do here is talk about philosophy and the esoteric concepts of life, please.
Well, I mean, surrender is perfection, you know, messiness is perfection. Like, it's all perfection. There is no imperfection. And so I have a saying, 8 seconds at a time. Like, you want to work on something, you want to make a change, just focus on the next 8 seconds. Don't focus on the next 8 years. And I'm all for planning, you know, you fail to plan, you plan to fail, right? So I'm all for planning. I'm not against that. Absolutely. It's how I live a lot of my life as well. And when you're working with intensity and stuff that's really tender and sensitive within one's psychology, within your own emotional being and your own spirituality, and there's a lot of unknown there, which can evoke a lot of fear, which likes to be compensated for because people don't like feeling fear because they think they're weak, especially high performers, right? Especially men, generally speaking. We avoid that. And so we're in compensatory strategy all the time, and we're wearing masks in the world, and we're just trying to be validated and feel enough and put pleasure back into our lives because the pain that we're feeling, that we're suppressing, is so big. And so you've got to put that shield down. You've got to feel a bit of pain, but just 8 seconds at a time.
That's something I can commit to. We're talking about commit. I'm like, okay, I can do 8 seconds. Yeah. Makes it very accessible. Otherwise, life feels so heavy. I got to eat the whole meal right now. It's like, no, that's just one bite. What's the next step? What's the next right step?
How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Right? Like, that's the principle, essentially.
With that point, there's a study I saw a few years ago. Feel free to Google this, people, if you don't believe me. A quote-unquote yogi in the 70s ate a Volkswagen buggy. And the way he did it, to your point, is one bite at a time. He literally cut. Damn. Don't try this at home. Madhu is not advising this. It's crazy. And you can see, I think it was maybe 71, something like that. And he cut the buggy into little pieces and digest it one at a time over the span of a year. And to that point is that no matter how metallic and big and gross the thing is that you might have to eat, or the process that you might have to move through is that if you chop it into 8-second bits, Yeah, small enough bites, then
it's manageable. It's accessible. Yeah. They're two really solid words that define that principle.
The two words being
accessible and manageable.
Accessible and manageable.
Yeah.
Because if it's just accessible.
Yeah.
But it can still ensue some chaos. Yeah. It's just manageable, but it's all the way over there. You can't grab it. What a beautiful concept. Well, you were talking about this idea of, because I know you've worked with a lot of high achievers. I've gotten the fortune of spending most of my time with similar types of people as well. I mean, also, you've helped special forces. You've helped, lots of different people, especially people who accomplished great deals of things, even those who seemingly have great deals of discipline and focus, yet still might struggle with, let's say, emotional blocks. What have you found the most helpful for uncovering and frankly processing through these kinds of emotional blocks, no matter how accomplished someone might seemingly be, or even if somebody's still just trying to get their life together? How do we start to identify those emotional blocks and work through them?
If there were three things that I would say, and I'll unpack each one, it's slow down, nature, and be witness, right?
Slow down, nature, and be witness. Okay.
Yeah, so I'll unpack them. So firstly, most people, whether you consider yourself a high performer or a high achiever or not, we move at a really fast pace. We just all move at a very fast pace. It's the world we live in. I'm not saying every single person in the world, but in the Western world, particularly in the US, I mean, and this is no offense to any other country, but there's no Polish dream, there's no Australian dream, there's no Kazakhstani dream, there's the American dream, right? The American dream symbolizes something. And as part of that symbolism, there is an element of speed and go and hustle and work, and it's the American dream, right? And so here in America specifically, we move very fast, very, very fast. So that's not necessarily the speed of wisdom, and our nervous systems aren't necessarily accustomed to that much industry, right? It's very industrial. And so you think about our nervous systems, how we've evolved. I'm not saying we haven't evolved in precarious environments. We have, but it's nothing like this. So we've got to slow down, first of all. Now, the issue with slowing down, or the challenge, because there's pros and cons with everything, right? The pro is that you get to see more of yourself, more of life, and you get to access more of you, right? More of what you've been running from, what you've been avoiding, more thoughts, more creativity, maybe more pain, more fear, more of everything, just more happiness, more joy, more curiosity, and more of the stuff that you need to look at, the stuff that you've been really running from, that the personality has unconsciously held onto, right? And is distracting you from. So you got to slow down. Nature.
I'm going to pause before I go to nature. So, because it's too delicious. So it's got, you got to lick your fingers after it. So slow down. And you've said, what was it? You got to move at the speed of wisdom, which is not necessary. It's just not going stop and smell the roses.
Yeah. Smooth is fast.
Beautiful. Yeah. So slow down, take a breath, chill out. Okay. Please tell me more about nature.
So nature is going to help us. It's going to facilitate that. It's very, very soothing. It's very calming. And when we live in a most high performers, most people that move very fast are very restless internally. Body's restless, disconnected from their bodies, they're restless in their minds, they're thinking about the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. They struggle to be present. You know, in the presence of nature, whether it's a mountain, a forest, a beautiful ocean, a lake, a ravine, whatever it is, right? There's a slowness there, that there's a comfort, that there's a holding. Nature holds us. I mean, for me personally, man, I think there are a few elements in my life, a few things that have saved my life many times on the brink of suicide or the brink of, you know, self-destruction. Nature's been one of them. It's been very, very neutral, very objective, if you like, non-judgmental, compassionate, just present. So spend time in nature. But again, all of this comes at a cost. And the cost is that you're leaving your old self, and that can be very confronting for the ego that identifies with familiarity in the world. And this brings me to the next piece, be witnessed.
I want to lock this into my brain, you know? So nature really, if I'm understanding you correctly, means literally put yourself in the real world.
Fucking literally, yes.
Take your shoes off. Yes, that's right. Put your tootsies in the soil.
Yes.
Whatever the case may be, in the real world.
Spend more time there. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You don't have to go to the thickest jungles in the world in Panama or anything, but just go and just be in nature, right? That could be a park, but slow down. But again, the cost of that is that you're going to start discovering more of yourself that you're not going to like at the start because you've been judging it very hard. Like it could be maybe your jealousy comes up, or your fear of being seen, or your sense of inadequacy because you don't like your thighs or whatever the fuck it is, right? Like this stuff's going to come up when you slow down, right? So the next part is being witnessed. Like it's very important to be witnessed by trusted, respected, revered individuals. and groups. Maybe you join a men's group, a women's group, work with a therapist, a coach, a friend. Like, you allow yourself to be witnessed by people that love you and that you love them and care. You care for them, they care for you. And that can actually, people that have skills and that can support you. This is really important as well. And so in that being witness, you start to see these parts that you've been hiding from in less shameful ways. And so if there's less shame around these parts, like the jealousy or the fear that you hold or the sense of low self-worth that you're compensating for by having lots of money in the bank or being the big man on campus or whatever it is, right? Climbing the corporate ladder, whatever. Or the notches in your belt, whatever, however you define that, right? Or the athletic endeavor. Or just to give another example, you know, like the special operator that is, you know, untouchable and carries a mystique and a persona in the world. And I have an affinity for operators in the military as well. I mean, I've worked so much with them. The people I've worked with are fantastic humans, you know. But we compensate. We all compensate in different ways. So when you start being witnessed in the places that you've compensated and you're witnessed in loving ways, you defuse the shame. So the shame doesn't have a hold in it. Shame likes to hide. So now you're bringing that stuff into the open. You're wearing less masks. You're being more truthful. You're being more whole in the world. That's freedom, brother. Look, I lived in Texas for a long time. Like, freedom, I love freedom, right? Like, we can just talk, you know, sort of surface level. Like,
me too, brother.
Yeah. Like, I love freedom, but real freedom is being free of our internal chaos. It's being able to be witnessed in our shame and, yeah, maybe bring up some big stuff, but we can do it. We're not running from that shit anymore. That's freedom, man. And then, of course, there's layers and levels of expressions of freedom, whether it's, you know, at a sovereign level, cultural level, ethnic level, societal level, economic level, et cetera, et cetera. But freedom is the freedom from the stuff that we hold on to, that we can actually be with that.
And so in order to experience that freedom, you're saying this third principle, which is witness, really means putting yourself around people where you're accepted so that that shame doesn't...
But they'll also challenge you too, right? In healthy ways, in healthy ways.
Okay.
But again, like, people are people, though. Like, you're not going to find this perfect person. Like, people are going to bring their shit to you as well. And they're going to maybe accept you, but they may accept you with their lens, and that may be hurtful. And you know, you get to repair and work through that. And but yes, essentially that's what you said is accurate. Yeah. From my perspective.
People who will accept you and simultaneously not enable, right? So challenge.
Very well said, yes.
You can be present with you. Which facilitates, I like, as you're saying it, they build on each other. So it's like, slow down and put yourself in an environment that slows you down. And then put yourself in an environment with people, which also is arguably the most influential part of our environment, is humans, and support systems that allow and facilitate that. So that, in Sanskrit, there's a term sattva, which we were just talking about on our last show, which is literally means goodness or space. And there's this idea of space being created in the mind, and then when you get that space, all the scary things, as you're so expertly saying, come up. It's like when you sit down and shut up, as we say, and you sit down and shut up, then all of a sudden, all these thoughts that you have been moving too quick for them to stick show up. And then what do you do with those thoughts? Once you slow down, you're in nature, you're in the right environment, then what do you do to manage those thoughts, the negative beliefs, when they do show up?
Initially, nothing. That's part of the problem. We always want to, there's no offense to you, of course, and I genuinely mean that. And I have no problem offending you, but I'm just letting you know that's not my intention.
Understood.
Because I'm the same too, man. Like, I'm asking, okay, how? I ask my teacher all the time, okay, I get what you're saying, but tell me how. Steph, fucking metabolize it. Relax. Just slow down. But that's the thing, like, we often want to do something with it too quickly. We need to let it settle. Because doing something with it immediately is a form of distracting and actually numbing and running from it still. Because we're transforming it too quick. We're not letting it settle in our bodies and our nervous system for more wisdom and information to come to us. So actually just be with the discomfort. Be with the feeling of, oh, I'm inadequate. I'm not saying fester in it and let it consume you and end up in a mental asylum.
Marinate.
Of course. Like, there's a process. Like, if it gets too much, well, you got to go to your self-regulation practices and tools. Like, phone a friend. Hey, I'm hurting here. I need some help. Go watch a movie. Do something funny. Go for a walk. Like, drink a glass of water. Do healthy practices that if something feels too intense in your physiology and in your psychology, you've got to deliberately distract. But not, oh, I've got to do something with this now. And now I'm going to go hire a coach for a year and I'm going to go deep into that. Yeah. Well, cool, but be careful on the come from. Like, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But be careful. Like, where's that intensity coming from? Because now you're just meeting intensity with intensity.
If you've ever considered having a podcast, especially if you're expert at what you do, I cannot suggest more highly using Podigy's service, which is what we use. If you like this production here, I highly suggest you reach out to Podigy through their contact in the show notes below to run and host your podcast. I went through a bunch of different teams, tried a bunch of different things. No one came close to what I got post-production from Podigy. And even just making a launch easy, taking your content, sharing it, making it presentable. Please check out Podigy. If you're great at what you do and you've ever considered having a podcast, I really am excited for you to try them out as well.
Let the intensity settle, be with it, it will pass, it will move through you. And if it's not, you go to your practices. You go to the things that help regulate. You know, down-regulate your nervous system. Go to nature. That will help.
Back to the basics as you were teaching. Yeah, well, it's fascinating because even the idea of like, what do I do about it now? It's contradicting your point anyway, because it's like, no, the whole idea is you slow down and we're not just trying to distract ourselves by going to a fix. And yeah, I mean, I notice even in my tendency is always, I would in no way, shape, or form call myself a high achiever, but regardless, I think a lot of people might resonate with this, that my tendency is good distractions. I'm not good at a lot of things, but I'm really good at finding really good distractions. Like the best one's like, wow, what are you up to? Wow, that's great. And you know, for the most part, I'll buy into it. And then sometimes I'm like, yeah, it's good. And if you're not as good as what would come of me sitting down, shutting up and feeling this feeling. And are there any other, I feel like you're giving us an arsenal, which is exactly what we like to do here. Talk philosophically, try to understand it from a value perspective, theoretically understand it, and practically in terms of like strategy and system, making sure we have a tool belt. Are there any other particular practices or beliefs that you would suggest or advise for people who say, again, are even struggling to do these things? Let's say they're struggling to find environments to be in. Nature's easy, but like finding, say, witness. I know you facilitate option. Do you have something coming up too? Where you're actually doing something in person to do this? Is that right?
My wife actually has a retreat coming up October, mid-October, 17th to the 17th to the 19th,
Then we'll put it in the show notes, but just could you, just for the sake of helping us understand what will happen in that retreat or future retreats that you guys facilitate?
Yeah, sure. So the URL is christinehassler.com/retreat. It's women only, this particular issue. She's been doing this for 17 years. And part of, a lot of that is helping people process their suppressed and repressed stuff. You know, their trauma, their patterns, are helping them shift patterns, helping them really move through big emotions of grief, of shame, of anger, giving them, the ladies, more tools to really be themselves in the world, to recover from past hurts and to learn to trust again. I help her facilitate that as well, but it's her retreat. I come in. She has a number of other facilitators as well, but that's the thing that she leads. But yeah, it's in San Diego. It's a beautiful retreat. christinehassler.com/retreat. I mean, that's the thing that's in person that's coming up very soon, obviously. Yeah.
But you also do this type of work on an individual basis.
I've been working with people on an individual basis for 25 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, of course, as you guys know, in the show notes, you can find all the details. We'll have all the relevant links as well. And please check it out. And the cool thing is our people know. I don't mince my words, and therefore I do not suggest anything that I myself am not personally interested in. So I won't go to this one, but that's okay. But the next one. I mean, I know you do a lot of work around masculinity as well, and I know it becomes somewhat of an enigmatic topic. I mean, there's a way in which you ask 1,000 people, what does masculinity mean? You might get 1,000 different answers. I really appreciate the way you present this. I appreciate a lot of the ways you present these things. What would you say is a healthy understanding of, say, masculinity versus femininity, just as it's kind of naturally come up?
Yeah. So I'll come to that question in a second. I'll just preface something else first on the masculinity piece. I think it's important when particularly men are searching for their own sense of masculinity, that part of that search and that journey and that process is them arriving at what masculinity is for them. And so the deliberate exploration of that becomes, for lack of a better term, masculine in and of itself. And the evolution and exploration of who they become in that process opens them up to deepening into the masculinity that they're searching for, especially if they're very sincere and intentional of that process.
So in the exploration, the deep,
committed exploration, honest,
committed exploration of masculinity in itself is kind of like they say, courage means acting courageous. If people might say, how do I become courageous? You just act with courage or whatever the case may be. So in the same way with masculinity.
Similarly,
interesting. To make sure that we have, say, a healthy guideline for that committed exploration? Are there any tips or advice you would give?
Yeah, again, you need to be in the presence of other men that are walking that path. We need relational mirrors in our life so that you can then discern and say, yeah, that serves me, or no, that's not going to work for me, and here's why. Like, actually, yeah, it could be just a visceral gut feel, but then deepen into the intellectual reasoning behind that, you know, rationale and reasoning. That's an important part of our maleness, but it's also an important part of the way the masculine discerns in the world as well, right? In terms of the original question, masculine and feminine, just two wings of the same bird. They're just, from an esoteric, philosophical perspective, and even a pragmatic perspective, I follow an ethos or philosophy of spirituality known as Advaita Vedanta. So
that's why you're here, brother.
Okay, so I'm in good company. So that non-dual reality, at some point in everyone's life, if we're on that path of being a non-dualist, it's inescapable to not live in duality. It's like we have to come into duality to remember our non-duality, to remember our oneness, right? I mean, this stuff, you know, a lot of different things make me emotional. This stuff, I feel a lot of emotions just from speaking about this, because playing in the contrast, there's this great richness that comes with contrast. And doing energy or being energy, you know, doing energy is masculine, being energy is feminine, as an example, you know, yin and yang, the active, passive, these energetics are just contrasted energies that live within us. And when we learn to harness them and we learn to lead with a particular energy, which and when and how, we begin to master our internal selves. And that, you know, if you think of that yin yang image, we start to just be in that, and it becomes a blur eventually as it spins, and there's just nothing but oneness. Like, it's everything is one, you know. But again, I mean, that's, I don't want to get too esoteric, but there's great wisdom and learning and richness in contrast, and that's what masculine feminine energetics provide us. And depending on what vantage point you take, I'm of the belief that most male bodies will just naturally, they will carry and have a natural propensity to carry more masculine energy, right? But again, masculine feminine energies are almost even secondary to me. Like, it's less about that and more about how you integrate yourself and your experiences as a whole. Like, have you integrated your experiences as a child, as an adolescent human, coming into adulthood? Because those, again, impressionable, influential years shape how you relate to everything in life. And that takes a more of a front seat than even masculine, feminine dynamics. And I'm not to say that polarity dynamics and sexual polarity dynamics aren't important. They are.
Sure, but I understand. But it's very much like that we're now talking, I like this point, it's like we're talking about an external thing that's helpful from a descriptive standpoint. It helps expedite introspection of sorts, but more, say, essential is doing the type of inner work necessary to, let's say, even put us in a psychological position to have these kind of discussions to begin with.
And I guess there's two ways, you know, and I am of the belief that on that front, there's two ways. Like, you can just dive deep into polarity work without sort of quote unquote healing work or trauma work or nervous system work, although polarity work involves some of that anyway, but dive straight into polarity work as a vehicle to inner child work, or you can get into inner child work as a vehicle to polarity. You know, there is a circularity there. Yeah.
But I really appreciate your point too. And one of my favorite examples to this idea of there's a variety in order to even appreciate, say, the oneness and the difference, because we can understand they're both there. And the concept in Sanskrit is called achintya bheda bheda tattva, which literally means the concept of simultaneous oneness and difference. And just like when you take a drop of water from the ocean, if I had a drop, we're close to the ocean, we could practically go jump in right now. And if I put ocean water in my hand, I can say, this is the ocean, and I'm correct. And I can also push to the ocean, and it's also the ocean. And so really the ocean is a conglomerate of unlimited little particles of water, just like we are parts of whole. Yes. You know, we're still individuals, but parts of that whole. Anyway, I really appreciated that concept that you're bringing in. And I mean, the cool thing with people like you people, is that, you know, these are kinds of concepts that we can keep exploring day in and day out. And my goal, as always, is to help those who were like me, or are like me, I should say, that are always looking for help, support. They don't want to have to recreate the wheel, but rather stand on the shoulders of giants and create opportunities to actually learn from those, get witness, get support in such a way that we can live the life that we want. So I appreciate you for taking so much, 20 plus years. I mean, really, we could probably say 30 plus, we could probably say more. You know, it's like the majority of your, at least conscious life, to creating opportunities for people to thrive, to be inspired. And, you know, those are the only kind of conversations I'm ever interested in having anyway. And I'm excited to have many more conversations with you. The one thing I would like to pick your brain about before we have to go jump in the ocean, spend some time, is how would you define success? And on the Conscious Success podcast, we often talk about this idea, and there's just so many ways people define it. And I'd be curious, because you live what I think would be, many would consider, and I think yourself included, a very whole life, you know, very, let's call it, I like the idea of a whole life. And so what would you define success as?
Freedom from your pain and freedom from the unconscious things that drive you. In other words, I'll say it in a few different ways, right? Like making the unconscious conscious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've often said since having a child, you know, parenthood is the biggest medicine journey,
mm-hmm.
right? It's, don't get me wrong, I still have challenges in business and so forth, but business is just fucking easy compared to parenthood and what that really evokes and brings up in me, you know, speaking for myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in many sacrament and medicine journeys, you know, very deliberately and intentionally. And many have been beautiful and many have been very painful and revealing and all confronting in different ways. But parenthood, man, wow. And so my point in sharing that is material success is amazing. And I love material success as well. Like I'm a watch collector. I love watches. So I like nice things and aesthetically beautiful things. I love beautiful experience. I love all that. And that definitely drive me, the experiential side of that and how I feel in certain experiences. But for me, man, again, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier around, you know, true success or freedom, like real freedom, yeah. is being free from our pain. Like that's success, man. Like being free from the unconscious stuff that drives us in unsustainable, unhealthy, painful ways, you know, that cause us to compensate and believe that we're not worthy. So we have to, you know, drive a Ferrari or wear a $200,000 watch or have the house in the Bahamas. And again, nothing wrong with that stuff. Love all that stuff. You know, Ferraris are great, yeah. but what's the come from? Because yeah. if it's coming from a place of I'm a piece of shit and I'm not enough, and you're not necessarily saying that, some people are,
but you feel that,
yeah. yeah. And that's what's driving the quote yeah. unquote success or material success. That's a problem, man. That's not living. Because that ache is there. It doesn't go away. It doesn't yeah. just disappear. It's living in you still. And it's showing itself through the addictions, the compulsions, the low self-worth, the negative rhetoric, the inner critic. Yeah. So for me, man, success is freedom from that pain that's driving you.
I think it might be, if not my favorite, one of my favorite definitions, not only success, but conscious success and what we do here. Steph, I'm so appreciative of this conversation. I can see why so many of our mutual friends were so adamant that we had to sit together and do this. And I look forward to many, many more conversations. And as everyone knows, please go do yourself a favor and go check out what Steph is sharing. I'll say, when I first came across your stuff, it was easy. It was like, oh, of course, this is why you've inspired so many, and which people, you know, I respect, and, you know, friends, clients. Oh, this guy's amazing. Wow, he really is amazing. And so I so much value your time. Please, everyone, do yourself a favor of checking out all the links that we share below. Especially ladies, go do that retreat. Mm. And I look forward to keeping this conversation going many more times, brother.
Bless you, brother. I'm really glad we made it happen today.
And as always, if you enjoy topics like these, make sure you join our Conscious Success community at the link in bio.